We have come in our study of the Word of God to the book of Hebrews, to chapter 11, and we have been looking at verse 22 that says, "By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandment concerning his bones." This chapter talks about how God's people lived by faith. Paul would say, we walk by faith. By faith, Joseph pointed his kin people to God's promises about a return to what we call the promised land, the land of Israel. And he gave commandment concerning his bones, that he should not be buried when he died, that they should wait until everybody left Egypt. And then, of course, he was taken through the wilderness, and finally buried in a parcel of ground up in central Palestine. Now, verse 23 says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment." In other words, Moses was born to Amram and Jochebed during the days when Pharaoh was putting to death the boy babies of the Israelites, fearing that the Israelites would become so strong a people that they might try to take over the country. And instead of obeying this wicked law, these parents hid him for 3 months. And you say, well, why didn't they keep on hiding him? Well, almost any mother or grandmother that you know of could tell you the answer to that one. When he gets to be 3 months old, he makes so much noise and racket that you can't hide him. And so you know the story, how this lady put him in a little basket, probably made waterproof now, like a little boat, and put it not out in the middle of the Nile River, but in a bay or an inlet, tributary maybe, where Pharaoh's daughter bathed. And she came and saw the child and took him. And this says, because these parents had faith, they believed in God, they spared their child. And then this is followed by faith Moses, when he was come to years. When Moses was old enough to think for himself, when he grew up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, here was the young prince. He had a high office ahead of him in Egyptian religion, some of the scholars would tell us, but maybe he was to be the Pharaoh. He's the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But Moses just gave up Egypt, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He understood about the people of God, who they were, and why they were important. And his mother had taught him as a little boy, when she was taking care of him for Pharaoh's daughter, she taught him about God and about things like that. And so when he grows up, he's going to join God's people. I expect some of our brothers, Christian brothers in Russia and China, would understand this passage maybe better than we. Sometimes they have to deliberately choose to suffer affliction with the people of God. And in doing so, they do not enjoy the pleasures of this life, or the pleasures of sin, this says, for a season. Incidentally, we might tarry with this phrasing, the pleasures of sin are temporary. They're just for a season. They are never permanent or eternal. Now, verse 26 tells us what's really going on in Moses' thinking. It says, esteeming the reproach of Christ, the disgrace of belonging to God's people, greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Moses was looking into the future, and he said, these things of God are just more important. God's people are more important. And I'd rather have the rewards that God can give than all the horses and chariots and finery that Egypt had to offer. And so it says, he forsook Egypt. Gave up Egypt and eventually forsook Egypt in the sense that he left with the Israelites following him. And it says he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Moses could go on because by faith he could see God and God was real to him. If you and I are going to go on today, we must in this sense see him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover. Well, there never had been a Passover before this. And God told them, you know, to sprinkle the blood on the lintel, the cross piece, and the side posts of the door. And the firstborn would be spared in this judgment upon Egypt. By faith, Moses obeyed. He carried out God's instructions. And by faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land. By faith, Moses just started across the Red Sea when the water, held back by the wind, had been just piled up on both sides, which the Egyptians were saying to do, were drowned. You see, by faith, Moses was willing to move forward, believing that God would deliver his people, and of course he did. I somehow can't forget the story. It's told as a true story from here in the Tri-Cities area, and I won't identify it more than that. But the story is that some years ago there was a man preaching who didn't really believe the Bible in full, and he was saying, oh, well, they went across the Red Sea. The water probably wasn't more than 6 inches deep. I don't think he knew much geography, but water probably about 6 inches deep. And at that point, according to the story, one of the deacons shouted so loudly that it all but shook the rafters. And after the service, the preacher went to him and he said, Deacon, what was all that shouting about in the middle of my sermon? And the deacon said, isn't our God wonderful? He drowned all those Egyptians, and he didn't have but 6 inches of water to do it with. Now, of course, actually, you could go over there and take a look at that, and the water is far, far deeper than that. The point is, Moses obeyed. He followed God, and he kept the sprinkling of blood. Christ is our Passover, and so we have a sprinkling of blood. And they passed through the Red Sea. And by faith, in verse 30, the walls of Jericho fall down. Now, that's going to be Joshua some years later, after Moses is gone. Moses has died. And they go across and go around Jericho every day for 6 days. And then the next day, they walk around Jericho 7 times. Now, some of you folks listening have been in the army, and you can understand how this one went over. Joshua and his assistants got these folks up one morning, and they said, today we're going to walk around Jericho, roughest country in that part of the world, just uphill and down, over rocks and everything. And everybody's going to keep quiet. We're going to just be perfectly still and quiet. Nobody's going to talk. And we're going to walk all the way around Jericho. In the hot sun, of course. And so they walked around Jericho, and he got them up next morning, and he said, today, men, we're going to march around Jericho. Now, don't you know, some of you folks who know about things like this, how it went over when he got them up extra early the last day and said, men, today we're going to walk around Jericho 7 times. And around and around they went. Now, don't you know enough about human nature to know that there were the folks in the crowd that said, let's quit this foolishness and go on and take the city. Let's dig a hole through the wall. Let's see if we can break something through. And Joshua believed in God. Joshua was doing the way God told him to do it. And so he simply walks around Jericho till these walls fall down. Incidentally, the walls of Jericho are still there, just like they fell. It was actually a double wall. And the archaeologists have been digging in Jericho for a number of years. Now, the next verse says, by faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believe not, when she'd received the spies with peace. Now, this is part of the Jericho story still. This lady had heard about God. She tells this, and it's in the first part of the Old Testament. She had heard how God delivered his people from Egypt. She'd heard about the victories that God had given them across Jericho. And she had enough understanding to know the future. And she said, I want to be one of those people. I want to join them. Now, she's not commended for her conduct. She's not commended for, in a sense, turning against her own people. She is commended for her trust in God that led her to take sides with the people of God. And so she perished not with those that believe not. You see, she believed. She had faith. And she helped the representatives of the Israelites. Now, I want to read several verses together because they have a message as a unit. And I take it this is the part that's usually left out. What shall I more say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, of Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, that's Isaiah, of course, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. Now, here's the story of the suffering saints who endured their suffering by faith. And this part that we just read is so often left out when Hebrews 11 is presented as the heroes of faith, or the worthies of the Old Testament, or God's honor roll. And the emphasis so often is that, well, by faith Abel offered an acceptable sacrifice, and by faith he worshiped, by faith Noah built the ark, by faith Abraham left his hometown of Ur of the Chaldees, by faith Joseph pointed his family and the Israelites forward to their exodus from Egypt. By faith, Moses refused Egypt and all that it had to offer. By faith, Gideon, with his 300, defeated the Midianites, and Jephthah defeated the Ammonites, and Barak the Canaanites, and Samson did exploits against the Philistines. And then we've got Samuel and the prophets. And the conclusion that folks come to is, oh, by faith, these folks were always victorious and successful and honored and blessed and praised and happy. Well, now, they were very often. But if you stop there, you haven't told but half of the story. Because here we have the verses about these who were stoned and mistreated. You see, it's possible, and very often it's done, that folks leave out this part about how God's people meet tribulation and troubles. The plots of so many Christian novels leave out the idea that Paul expressed in Acts 14, that we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of God. That's right after Paul was stoned. There's the Madison Avenue approach, is that what we should call it, to evangelism and to the Christian life. The idea that a Christian, if you just become a Christian, all your problems will be over and your troubles will disappear and you'll live happily ever afterward. Now, just where in the Bible did you find anything like that? You find in the Bible that Paul can say our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Yes, but in history, the saints in the Bible and in church history have climbed the steep ascent of heaven through peril, toil, and pain. John Bunyan would say they climbed the hill of difficulty. Now, people across the centuries have been puzzled by suffering and evil. In the Bible, I mean. The book of Job, a large part of it, deals with the question, why does Job suffer? And his friends had an explanation. They were wrong, the voice of God's going to say later on. But Eliphaz is going to say, whoever perished being innocent, Job, if you were really innocent, all this wouldn't have happened to you. The next one came along and said, if thou wert pure and upright, surely he would awaken to thee. Job, if you were pure and upright, God, who seems to be asleep, would wake up and hear your prayer, and you wouldn't have all these pains and troubles and afflictions. And then the third one just made it worse. He rubbed salt in the wound. He said, God exacteth of thee much less than thine iniquity requireth. That's Zophar. God doesn't spank folks hard as they ought to be spanked, is what he said. And if you're getting this much of a spanking, Job, you've done something awful. No, that wasn't the reason, but that was these men's explanation. Psalm 73, almost the whole psalm. Why do the wicked prosper and the upright have so many difficulties? The first part of the book of Habakkuk, same thing. Why do the wicked prosper? Why is the law slacked? Why is there so much evil among God's people? Jeremiah asked that kind of question in chapter 12. In the New Testament, 9th chapter of John, you have the man born blind, and Jesus meets him, and the disciples said, why? Who did sin, Jesus, this man, or his parents? Whose fault was it? And Jesus said, neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God might be made manifest, shown forth in him. Now, Jesus wasn't saying this man was sinless or his parents. He's saying that wasn't the reason for this. Oh, I have been interested for, 20 years in this question, and I have asked over and again the teachers of the 4- and 5-year-olds in Sunday school, before they go to school, this question. If you'll tell little children the first stories in the Bible, what questions do you get? And about 95% of the time, the teacher, all of them tell you the same thing, practically. They'll say, these little boys won't know why'd God make that snake. Oh, sometimes it's phrased differently, but folks ask why. And the simple fact of the matter is that evil comes because God permits it, and then more basically because man has become a sinner. But now, in the Old Testament, Moses took his stand with the people of God, and it brought him trouble. Trouble and more trouble. Pharaoh gave him a hard time. Israel was stubborn and rebellious. Some of the priests, Dathan and Abiram, and those men rebelled against him. Miriam, his sister, and Aaron questioned his authority. The congregation was always murmuring, complaining. And this was after Moses had obeyed God. We had right here in this chapter the treatment of Isaiah. He was sawn asunder. Jeremiah was thrown in the dungeon. Amos went to Bethel to preach. And after the preaching, they didn't say, "Now, prophet, won't you stay for dinner?" The way folks do would do in this part of the country. Oh, no. They said, "Go on back down south and prophesy down there and eat." They don't even want him to stay for a meal. In the time of Ahab and Jezebel, Obadiah hid 100 prophets up in the mountain, fed them on bread and water. In other words, Jezebel was going to kill them. In the New Testament, Jesus said to a scribe, "The foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests. Son of man hath not where to lay his head." And the idea is, if you follow me, you might not either. Jesus said to the 12, "I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Beware of men. They'll deliver you up to councils, flog you in their synagogues." He said, "Do not think I've come to bring peace, but a sword." In John 16, Jesus says, "In the world ye shall have tribulation." And they did. All the 12, except John, and you're not real sure about him, died violent deaths. Paul says, "Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one, 39 stripes. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck, a night and a day have I been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of rivers, perils of robbers, in perils from my countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles." And he just goes on like this. Paul's attitude toward suffering, though, is, "All these things have turned out, fallen out, rather, unto the furtherance of the gospel." Paul can say, "There was given to me a thorn in the flesh." This was God's gift. He tells Timothy, "All that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." Now, it was like this in the early church. Ignatius, one of John's disciples, was thrown to the lions in Rome. Polycarp, another of John's disciples, was burned at the stake at Smyrna, February 23rd, 155. Luther had to be hidden up at Wartburg Castle to keep folks from putting him to death. John Calvin was driven out of Geneva after he'd been there just a few years. John Knox served 18 months as a galley slave. During the war, I went to Edinburgh, and one Sunday I was there and went to the famous old Greyfriars Church. There in the cemetery is the monument to 17,000 who lost their lives in the killing times in Scotland. The early Baptists in Central Europe were tormented and tortured and mistreated, worse than any group you could imagine. So were the Brethren. The early missionaries of the cross often died of diseases that are now kept under control by drugs. And so there are the martyrdoms of the 20th century in some parts of Africa, some communist countries, and so on. Now, let's be sure not to stop here. The Christian, in spite of what God sends and permits, is delivered from the fear of death, the fear of judgment. That was what Luther was so excited about when he understood the gospel. The Christian doesn't have the problems of modern man. Who am I? Where am I? Where am I going? What's right and what's wrong? The Christian has the promises of God and the assurances of God that no good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly. The Christian understands that we are pilgrims and strangers here and that our real citizenship is in heaven. The Christian can live in anticipation of the blessed hope, the return of Christ. And the Bible's going to say, "Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad." God led his people through the wilderness, and that was a difficult trip for 40 years. But Moses says in Deuteronomy 8, "God did this to humble thee, to prove thee, to test you." to teach thee that man doth not live by bread alone, and to do thee good at the latter end. Annie Johnson Flint says it this way, God hath not promised skies always blue, flower-strewn pathways all our lives through. God hath not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. But God hath promised strength for the day, rest for the labor, light for the way, grace for the trials, help from above, unfailing sympathy, undying love. Here's the story then of how by faith many of God's people endured difficulties, mocking, scourgings, imprisonment. They were stoned, tempted, sawn asunder. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins. That's all clothing they had. They endured poverty. They lived in caves of the earth. And they obtained a good report through faith. And yet they didn't receive the fullness of God's promise. That's still to come. You see, this tells us, in summary, that God's people live by faith. Many were victorious and accomplished God's purpose. And then there were these others whom God permitted to suffer. But all of these folks, in Paul's language, walked by faith.